The content of this podcast should not be considered financial or investment advice. All interviews and discussions are opinions only, and the podcast has been created without taking into consideration the listener's financial objectives, financial situation, or needs. Listeners should obtain independent advice before making any financial decisions. The Explorers podcast is sponsored by RM Capital, a provider of specialist small to mid-cap corporate advisory and boutique wealth management services. Hi, this is Barry Fitzgerald, Garen Perro columnist for Stockhead. Welcome to another edition of the Explorers podcast. Now, it's a great day with the gold price punching back through $1,800 US an ounce after spending it a month below the psychological barrier. That's got to be good news for the gold stocks that have been taking a bit of a backseat of late to the battery metal stocks. Now, if it's ounces in the ground with undoubted exploration upside that does it for you, then today's Explorers podcast focus, Bezra Gold, is one to put on the radar. Ostensibly a Canadian company with a long history, Bezra listed on the ASX earlier this month through a one-for-one CHESS depository interests system under the code BEZ or Bravo Echo Zulu, raising $10 million in the process. The CDIs last traded at 13 cents, giving Bezra a market cap of more than $38 million. I mentioned the long history, which it has to be said is somewhat checkered, but we're talking about a new look Bezra today. The company has restructured, recapitalized, and rejuvenated itself under a new look board and management team. So it deserves to be on the radar on the basis of a 3.3 million ounce gold resource at its Bao Gold Project, an easy drive from Kuching in Sarawak in East Malaysia, or more specifically, the part of Borneo that belongs to Malaysia. Apparently some $40 million has been spent on Bao over the years, which is more than the current market cap of the company. So we've got an interesting one with us today. And to bring us up to speed on the Bezra story and its plans, we have its chief executive, Ray Shaw, with us today. G'day, Ray. Welcome to the podcast.
G'day, Barry. Very nice to be here, and thanks very much for the opportunity to be able to present to your listeners the Bao and Bezra stories.
I mentioned the existing 3.3 million ounce resource, which is as big as it gets amongst your peers on the ASX. And obviously, there's a bit of a history there. Fill us in on the Bezra's background, and more importantly, I guess, the background to establishing that resource at Bao, and obviously the restructuring, recapitalization that's been going on.
Look, there's, as you said, Bezra has had a long history, and it's corporate happenstance that we're here today with a new listing at 3.3 million ounces. And as your listeners will be well aware, there aren't too many new listings that come to the market with that sort of resource. Bezra has had an association either in its own right or through its antecedents back in at Bao in Sarawak for about 15 years. And prior to that, it had been involved in Vietnam and where it operated successfully to gold mines. At that stage, it was able to provide funding, and as you've highlighted, Bezra itself has spent more than US $40 million on the Bao project. Because of corporate happenstance and things that are past history now, Bezra went through an exercise of rationalization. It no longer has any interests other than its Bao interest in Sarawak. And as you pointed out, we've just listed on the ASX. It is originally a Canadian company, and so its listing is of CDIs. The company itself, because of the funding that it has put in historically, as well as that of its joint venture parties, there's more than 250,000 metres of drilling has taken place in the Bao gold fields, which is effectively a corridor of about 15 by 8 kilometres. It's located very conveniently about half an hour's drive from the capital of Sarawak, Kuching, has a population of about 600,000 people. So it's extremely well serviced with infrastructure. You know, we've got great communications, there's power, water, and all-purpose sealed roads throughout the entire region. And importantly, the Bao Township, after which it is named, has had a very long history in mining, from the artisanal Chinese miners back in the 1850s right through to when the last commercial operation closed in 1996.
Now, 3.3 million ounces, as both intimated, you don't get that with many ASX-listed gold companies of any scale. What's the plan from here on?
Well, the thing is that, in essence, we believe we've got the dragon by the tail, or the tiger by the tail, depending on your which type of animal you want. But the 3.3 million ounces, and as you rightly point out, your listeners know, there aren't too many new listings that come to the market with that sort of resource. And even if they do, often it's as a result of very extensive programs, almost exhaustive exploration, and they're at that development stage. Besser is anything but that. The work that's been done in the past identified the 3.3 million ounces in essentially six main deposits. Now, the people who worked in those areas in the past and people who are working there currently have conservatively estimated that we have an additional exploration target of between 4.9 and 9.3 million ounces. In other words, that you collectively could have something well over 10 million ounces. And on that basis, we're looking very definitely at Bao becoming potentially a top quartile new gold development project.
Obviously a very sizable resource, and obviously a very sizable disconnect between the current market cap of the company and what a 3.3 million ounce resource would normally be valued at. What's going to be happening, Ray, to close that discount, you think?
Well, I think, and you're exactly right. I mean, what you're doing is highlighting at the moment that the we have an enterprise value per ounce of substantially less than $15. And with it compared to those in the market, we believe, extremely competitively valued at the moment. And part of the reason for that is quite simply, in doing podcasts like this and having only been listed for 3 weeks, it's about getting the story back out there. So it's about investors becoming aware of what it is that we are doing, and more importantly, how we're going to progress going forward to monetize by shareholder growth of shareholder value our assets that we've got. I mentioned earlier that we've very much got the tiger by the tail, we believe, and that's because of the considerable exploration upside. And as we see it at the moment, one of the key things about Bao, which really has us excited, is that it's been compared to the Carlin style of mineralization. Now, Carlin style mineralization, some of your listeners may be aware, it's named after the Carlin district in Nevada, and it's a disseminated type of gold, which typically you don't see in core or in samples. It's bound up chemically with sulfide elements such as pyrite, etc. And so you only effectively know the gold content after you've done the assay results. Now, although it's a fine type of gold, and because it is a fine gold, it doesn't lend itself very well to gravity separation. So there are additional processing requirements to produce a doré. But having said that, the Nevada Carlin region has produced over 200 million ounces, 200 million ounces of gold, 6,400 tons, and it was the area in which both Barrick and Newmont became the major mining powerhouses that they are today. There are very few of these Carlin-style mineralizations in the world, besides at Carlin itself, in Alaska, and perhaps in southern China. But one of the things about Bao is that it has been associated with style of mineralization. And as we know already, with the exploration target that we've got there, and the fact that we've got 3 million ounces occurring along a corridor which is 8 by 15 kilometres. It's a very big plumbing system, and to date we've only scratched the surface. To give you an idea, that 3.3 million ounces, 80% of that resource lies within about 70 or 80 metres of the surface. So the geology that we've got, it's not just because of the geology, it's because the previous drilling practices typically only targeted the interface between a shallow limestone and a shale region, and that's where the gold mineralization, the gold endowment was most evident. So if you like, it was low-hanging fruit. They just went along and did their drilling at that interval. But there were other areas where, whilst doing that, they came across, and they were typically getting 1.3, 1.4 grams. But there were other areas where, when they went back and got the assay results, they're getting 12 grams and 15 grams, and the drill holes terminated at those depths. And the reasons why they terminated at those depths was, until they got the assay results 2 or 3 months later, they didn't even know they were in the mineralization. So there are sweet spots around, and that's part of what our drilling program is going to address when we start in the next 2 or 3 weeks, is precisely going back to those places and forensically reevaluating these sweet spot areas, because they're the areas that are going to add substantially to our increasing our resource, and importantly, they'll also increase our head grades that we're looking at.
You mentioned the drilling program. When is that due to start?
Well, we've been very fortunate because, as I mentioned, Bow has a long history of mining, and the drilling contractors we've got are situated in Bow. They're very experienced. They've worked with Bezier in the past, so we've got two rigs that are going to start within the next couple of weeks, and the crews are local crews. And in fact, one of the things for your listeners again is to appreciate that, you know, we're not a newbie company going into some foreign jurisdiction where we don't know what's going on. I mean, we've been there for more than 15 years previously. Yes, there was a hiatus there whilst the corporate happenstance was going on and things weren't happening. But I can tell you that the key people we're using, including some of our key geological people, are absolutely delighted that we're back there again and been in touch with us and say, hey, we want to come and rejoin the effort. So there's a real reconnect and a continuity of that knowledge that was around previously, which we'll be able to leverage as we go forward.
And of course, apart from the long history of gold mining in Bau itself, across the border there in the Indonesian part of Borneo, Kalimantan, you've got the 7 million ounce Kilian gold project. Mount Muro, I think, was about 3 million ounces. Similar trend?
Yes, it is. It's for those geological minded people who are listening, there's a band, if you like, that runs from the tip, and in fact Bow's at one end of it. So you've got Bow at one end, and it's an arcuate feature, the lineation that runs around through Kalimantan, including the two mines that you just identified, and it's part of an old continental margin back in the Cretaceous. And it was that margin that produced the types of metallurgy that we've now got. And in the mid-tertiary, we had intrusions come through, and they remobilized that mineralization within the deeper sediments of that former margin. And that's what we now see at shallow depth at Bow.
We've mentioned that the resource is across a number of deposits, known deposits. With your upcoming drilling program, which of the prospects will be targeted?
We've got a number of areas. Key ones are going to be at Pendjeru, which is at the southern end of our corridor. There we've already got 997,000 ounces of chalk resource. We've got an exploration target in that area of an additional 1.7 to 3.3 million ounces. And so what we're doing, and for you to emphasise to your listeners, is that our drilling program to capture some of that additional exploration target is essentially brownfield exploration. There's a couple of elements to that. Firstly, Pedjeroo is an area where our 997,000 ounces at the moment is all inferred resource. So what we're intending to do is infill drilling. And obviously the infill drilling, you've got much better prediction of what your outcomes are going to be. And that allows us with the extra density of drilling to reclassify the inferred into indicated and measured. That's important because you need indicated and measured to input those resources into your future feasibility studies. Second thing we'll be doing at Pedjeroo is pursuing, as I mentioned, some of these higher grade areas where the drilling just stopped at 70 metres, typically 70 metres subsurface, and trying also not only to increase the resource, but increase the grade. We'll then be looking at an area of Bekajang, which is just nearby to the Bao Township, and that's closest to where the last mining was undertaken at a place called Taipari. And, you know, some people who have heard of refractory mining in the past say, oh yes, but the grades are generally low. Well, at Taipari, the mine that was open, it was an open pit, down to 80 metres depth, they produced 1.2 million ounces at 7 grams a tonne. And at the time mining ceased, it wasn't because they'd run out of mineralisation, but the commodity price had dropped to about $300. So we know that the Bao corridor is capable of, you know, much higher grades of endowment. And our final area of interest will be up in the north of Pedjeroo, where we have, again, nearly a million ounces, but that's in a variety of classifications from indicated, measured, and inferred.
Which leads into the question, obviously, what can be said about likely timing of, you know, production / development planning?
Look, our development planning, and it goes back, tiger by the tail, what we want to do is make sure that with our development, it's optimized, and with refractory type gold, you know, in a smaller deposit, you might produce export quality concentrate and send it off to typically an Asian smelter. But as you start to build up your resource inventory, that then raises the options of, hey, do we go and take it through to final production and produce a doré on site? So it's because we've got a number of deposits along the corridor, the question arises, should we be looking at blending our ore, producing a standalone of any one of these particular deposits? What's the best way of going ahead with development? And as part of that, because we're on a strike length of 15 kilometres, as you would well know, you would expect variations in the metallurgy. So we want to better understand the metallurgy. There's been a previous feasibility study at Juukan. We know that the metallurgy in that area particularly well, but we also want to understand the metallurgy in some of the other deposits a bit better so that we can basically, as I say, optimize how we go about the development scenario.
Now, obviously for investors in Australia, Sarawak might be a bit of a mystery, but I was just wondering if you could touch on Sarawak as a mining jurisdiction. And obviously in the prospectus, the documents in support of the recent raising, what should investors be aware of in terms of mining title in that part of the world?
That's a very good question. And one of the things that one finds frustrating is in the past when you mentioned to people, we've got this opportunity in Sarawak, and their first commentary is, oh, we're not interested in mining in Indonesia. Firstly, Sarawak is in Malaysia. And being in Malaysia, as most of your listeners would be aware, it's part of the Commonwealth. And so its rule of law is British common law style of law. So its minerals ordinance is very much the same as what you'd find in any of the mining acts that we have in the onshore jurisdictions in Australia. So the minerals vest in the Crown, and then you apply for a license, a title, to go and work the areas. Mining leases, similar to Australia again, where you 21-year period. So the system itself is very similar to what we have in Australia, Canada, New Zealand, etc., and obviously the UK. And I guess the other issue is that BESRA and its joint venture partner with it and before it have been involved and been exposed to these mining ordinances for over 30 years, nearly going on for 40 years. So there's a lot of knowledge, working knowledge on how the system operates.
And a name that didn't jump out at me, but your major shareholder with 30.6%, Pangea. Who are they?
Well, they're a Swiss-based investment group. They came to be a major shareholder in BESRA as part of the restructuring that I spoke of at the outset of our interview. So they were there back after the after BESRA had pulled out of Vietnam, and they took a position at that stage and have continued to show the wherewithal to continue with BESRA as it's gone through the process of remorphing itself and listing on the ASX.
None better to have as a substantial shareholder, I guess, the Swiss. I mentioned we've talked about, I think you said, a half an hour from Kuching, which is quite amazing. So in terms of infrastructure, when it does come to a development, one, I would assume that you're not going to have trouble attracting labour, and two, telecommunications, electricity, all that sort of stuff, all easily accessible?
Yes. In fact, for those who are interested and want to look at our presentation that we've put out, you'll see there's, I refer to it as a drone's eye view of sort of an oblique perspective looking along the corridor, showing the topography of the area, and you'll see on the left-hand side there's a road system that comes down right through our corridor, and there's a 66 kilovolt power supply that comes down through there. So there's no issue with power.
And finally, your background and what's your excitement factor with BESRA?
Look, very excited. I've been around in the resources industry for several decades. I have worked in various sectors, from oil and gas, worked in coal, and then more last decade or so more in hard rock areas. The good thing about being a CEO, of course, it's very hard to find a CEO of any listed company who doesn't say, A, their company's undervalued, and B, they don't have the best project since sliced bread. But unfortunately, I've got to sort of say that exactly the same thing, but with very heartfelt reason. And the thing that excites me about this is it does have legs. It's as you said in the intro, you don't get too many new listings with this size of resource, let alone what the upside potential is. And that's the thing that I see, and that's why I'm here today, and that's why I wanted to be CEO, because precisely of what its upside potential is. This type of opportunity does not exist in Australia.
That's for sure, and we've got a wave of M&A action in the gold sector here at the moment, but they're all squabbling over 1 million ounce deposits, if that.
And look, that's the arbitrage, if you like, between where we are and in Australia. But in a jurisdiction such as in Malaysia, you just think, hey, let's get on with it.
There we go, folks. Very interesting story. A name that we'll be hearing a lot more from as the exploration target gets chased down, and eventually we move into production development plan for what is going to be a very sizable potential operation. So with that, Ray, thanks for your time today. Best of luck with it all, and we'll be watching with interest.
Thanks very much, Barry. Really appreciate it, and I hope we've engendered some interest, as you say, from other things. Cheers.
Cheers. This episode of the Explorers Podcast was sponsored by RM Corporate Finance, an active participant in emerging companies around the globe.